Hello, very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, the English-speaking, Spanish-football-talking podcast that brings you all the great news and views from around the beautiful game, from Spain's top flight, and of course, from the national team as well. There is plenty to talk about. We didn't do a Thursday show last week. Perhaps we should have. We all ran out of time, but La Liga just carried on trucking through, and that's why we've got loads to get through on the show today, this Monday morning. I'm delighted to say I, myself, Ollie Wilson, are joined by two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. First and foremost, a man who's making his first appearance of the season, back out from injury and coming back into the starting 11, Mr. Jason Pettigrove, joining me today. Jason, first and foremost, great to speak to you, and look, we started a new season without me calling you Jason Pettiford, which I think just shows that we've come a million miles from where we started.
Yes, moving it forward. And then me, the 90th minute substitute, comes on to score the winner. So we're getting there.
Is that a link to anything and all things Betis against Madrid from last week? We'll talk about that in just a moment as well. Joining Jason in the front two of the Marca podcast today, it's Mr. Ewan McTeer. Ewan, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good as always. Maybe in need of a wee rotation at some point, but yeah, happy to make my third or fourth appearance of the season. Yeah, I'll be getting dropped soon. You'll buy someone in January. That's what it'll be.
We are looking. Don't you worry. We are looking. But you know, you get these big stars that already so early in the season complaining of tiredness and needing a rest. Maybe, just maybe, Ewan, you shouldn't be doing all these pre-season tours and everything with your busy writing elsewhere. I tell you what, talking of your writing elsewhere, I'll shamelessly plug it now inside the first 2 minutes of the podcast. Actually, I'll let you do it, Ewan. We're going to be talking a lot of Atletico Madrid. We'll probably touch on this again when we get on to Atleti today. But you've had a little something hitting the shelves in the last week or so, haven't you?
Yeah, obviously Atletico Madrid, we talk about them all the time now because, you know, they're a great team now. You know, two Champions League finals and win the Liga in 2013-14. And yeah, they've come a long way from when they were relegated in the year 2000. So yeah, somebody really should have wrote a book about that, and that's what I did. So hijacking La Liga and all good and weird enough to stock at bookshops just now and online, sort of telling the story of how Atletico Madrid went from the second division to winning La Liga.
A story that certainly had to be told, and nice to see you and taking the initiative and diving in there as well. Jason, haven't you got a book coming out in the next month or so, I believe?
Yeah, I have, but it doesn't relate to La Liga, so I'm not going to shamelessly plug it on here.
No plugs. All right, okay, fair enough. But good to know that that your book will be on the shelves. And I tell you what, when it does hit the shelves, we'll still plug it anyway. You know, we've got to support each other in this Marca group here. We've got to help each other out. And that's what Barca have needed to do to start the season. Everybody talking about a thin squad on the ground and not having the depth at the moment, but they are looking good in the early part of this season. They won 6-1, sorry, Ewan, against Eibar last week. Lionel Messi getting four, and then a 3-0 victory on the road against Girona, the new boys of La Liga, who've actually been a real thorn in a couple of teams' sides to start this campaign, and certainly not looking out of their depth in La Liga at the moment. Luis Suarez getting off the mark, and Ernesto Valverde, the Barca coach, saying that it's fantastic to finally see Suarez getting in the goals this season. Jason, I'll start with you. Was there any worry about Suarez being a little slow to start in front of goal this year when you've got the likes of Messi? Of course, Dembele's now out for 2 months, confirmed this weekend. You're not going to be too fussed if Luis Suarez is just taking his time to get into the goal-scoring groove, and you surely believe that it's going to come at some point anyway, but good that it did this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, look, you know, Suarez is one of, if not the best centre-forwards in the game right now. He's always going to score goals. I think what we have to look at is the way sort of Valverde's just tweaked sort of Barcelona squad. He's, you know, the main thing he's done is brought Messi back in as the false nine, which has meant as a result that Suarez has had to play slightly over to the left. And I think, you know, in doing so, it means that, you know, where once perhaps Suarez would have been on the end, Messi's now banging him in. I think it's nine in the games he scored so far, which surpasses his own record. But Suarez, no, I mean, look, he may change it around again and bring Messi out to one side or the other and put Suarez back in the middle. He's going to score goals. And frankly, I don't think it matters who scores them as long as Barcelona get the result. And you know, as we've seen so far this season, you can't argue at all with what Valverde's done. Even the players have identified over the weekend that he's the guy that has to take all of the credit. So you know, in such a short space of time, after Luis Enrique's gone, Valverde's already won the squad over, he's won the supporters over, he's brought that experience that he had at Athletic Club, and everything at the moment's looking very rosy for them.
Yeah, it is looking all fine and dandy for Barca at the moment. Just on that Suarez point of him playing a little further wide, Messi is the false number nine, if you will. I mean, it's something that out-and-out centre-forwards at Barcelona have been frustrated with in the past. Now, Suarez does have a bit more versatility to his game than, say, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and can play a wider role. But he is a goal-scoring centre-forward, and centre being the operative word there. Is it going to disgruntle him at all that he's maybe being moved out to that wide flank? Is it something that may rear its ugly head over time, do you think?
To be honest, I think it's perhaps only if he doesn't score as many goals as what he himself expects. You know, forwards, particularly centre-forwards, are paid to score goals. Okay, so he hasn't started off as well as what everybody expected. But, you know, again, I just revert to that point I just made. I think, yeah, he's a team player, and if the team's still winning, you know, does it really matter if he doesn't score, you know, 30, 35 goals in the season? As long as he contributes and as long as, you know, he plays well, I don't really see what the issue is. We've had this thing ever since he's been there about, you know, Messi being kingpin, and can people like Suarez and Neymar accept that? Both of them have showed before, and obviously before Neymar left, that they were more than happy for Messi to still be the main man. So that, to me, isn't an issue either. I think the only possible problem comes if a lack of confidence through not scoring goals.
Now, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here, Ewan, because Jason is saying there that Neymar and Suarez have been happy to play second fiddle, if you will, to Lionel Messi. But recent comments from Jeremy Mateu, the Barcelona defender, saying that Neymar left very much because he felt overshadowed by Messi. There's only so long that a big star and a big forward is going to be happy to play out of place. And doesn't that just worry you slightly, Ewan, about this Barca side, that the more we hear about Neymar leaving Barca, the more we hear that it was because he was a little frustrated with being overshadowed by the Barcelona superstar and number 10 Lionel Messi, as he obviously is going to be. But it does also show, as I say, that these players do want to feel like it's a level playing field at times in this Barca side.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you can believe when people say that Neymar maybe left Barcelona to go to Paris Saint-Germain because he felt that Messi was, you know, taking all of the glory. He was maybe overshadowed. I'm not sure it was fully because of that. I think there were so many reasons behind it, and some of them will never really learn. But that's, you know, definitely a plausible reason. That's probably factored into his decision a little bit. He knows he can go to this team that is still maybe in his mind a Champions League contender, and he can be the star. But I think it shouldn't really be a problem going forward. I don't think Luis Suarez is that kind of player. Like Jason said, I mean, he's all about the team winning. I mean, look at that World Cup when he was in the quarterfinal and stuck his hand out on the line. He knows that, you know, he's not going to get to play in that semi-final if all does go according to plan and he stops his goal and they miss a penalty. But it was all about Uruguay winning that game for him. It wasn't about making sure that he was, you know, the main man, making sure that he had a chance of playing. It was, for him, it was, you know, we need to win this game and I don't care if I have to be sacrificed. And, you know, it's a little bit different to Barcelona. He's still going to score a lot of goals from this slightly more left field position. But if he has to sacrifice himself a little bit to win another La Liga, another Champions League, then you know he's going to be okay with that. I think maybe he differs slightly a bit from Neymar, who probably wanted a bit more of the headlines, whereas Suarez never really seems to seek that attention. And, you know, when we think about Suarez in the headlines, it's never really because he's, you know, doing something great. And it's, you know, he's always had controversial headlines. And I think now he's, since he moved to the Camp Nou, he's sort of just kept his head down and he just maybe just wants to stay away from the limelight as much as possible.
I'm just going to jump in on that as well quickly and just say the only other issue, you know, potentially that could raise its head, he does get quite frustrated quite often, and that sometimes comes across in sort of physical elements of his game, and you do sort of worry that if he does go a few games without scoring, that sort of side might sort of rear its ugly head again and potentially puts Barca at a loss for him for two or three games if he happens to get sort of accumulation of yellow cards or a red card. So that's something perhaps for him to work on, that, you know, if things aren't going well for him, just to keep his head down and do, you know, just keep going, do what he's done in the past, and eventually it'll turn around again.
Luis Suarez, a bit of a loose cannon. No, I'm not having that in any way, shape or form. Very mild-mannered at times, the Uruguayan centre-forward. Just quickly as well on the change in formation, a lot of match reports having this game against Girona down as a 4-4-2 system for Barcelona with Messi and Suarez together as the front two and Paulinho, Rakitic holding a midfield. Interesting that we don't often see Barca going with the 4-4-2. Do you agree that it was this setup? Do you think it shows that Valverde's seen a versatility? And what does it say about losing Dembele and the faith that they have in being able to still continue with that front three style without Dembele in there?
Well, Dembele's going to take a while to sort of gel and get used to the way Barca play. I think he sort of identified that when he was presented and sort of said, you know, don't call me another Neymar, I need to be allowed to develop. So I think, you know, as long as the supporters particularly are happy, I think the club know it's going to take a few months. We only need to look at Neymar when he joined, and it took him a few months to sort of really sort of get into his game, learn how to play the Barca way. In terms of the formation, again, you know, I tip my hat to Valverde. He's going to do it his way. You know, whether that means sort of rotation, 4-4-2s, 4-2-3-1s, 4-3-3s, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about winning games, winning trophies. So to me, I don't think it really matters which formation they use, as long as it's a successful one.
Just find it interesting that we are seeing Barca going back to a Mike Bassett 4-4-2, if you will. And we see all these formations kind of become a trend with the 4-2-3-1. Then we've now got three at the back with wing backs, two in midfield, and sometimes two, maybe three up top, depending on the manager's style, etc. But it just seems that I wonder if Barca now, if they start finding their feet with a 4-4-2, is everybody going to start looking back and just kind of go, oh yeah, 4-4-2, remember that? That used to work very nicely. Now they take on Sporting Lisbon in midweek in the Champions League. Valverde, of course, trying to guide them to European glory once again. Jeremy Mateo will face perhaps his former side if he plays for Sporting Lisbon. Said he's happy to celebrate any goal he gets against Barcelona, which I'm always happy to hear when a player isn't shy about scoring goals against former clubs. What are we expecting from Barca against Sporting Lisbon? They're not perhaps the weakest side in the group, arguably Olympiacos are. It's not the most difficult group, although Juventus will be problematic for Barca. But are Sporting going to give them a bit of a test, do you think, this week?
I think it depends how... Oh, sorry, go on. You first, June, please.
No, just in terms of answering that first question, Earl, in terms of what I'm expecting from Barcelona this week, I'm expecting not to concede to Jeremy Mateo. I don't think this celebration, non-celebration issue is going to be an issue at all. I almost found it curious that he was even asked what he would do if he scored. I think that'll be one that, he's going to have his work cut out at the other end. And yeah, this is, like you mentioned, this is, you know, every away game in Europe is quite tricky. And we have to remember the last two away games for Barcelona were 4-0 in Paris and 3-0 in Turin. So they've not maybe been the best on the road in recent times. And they lost away at Manchester City last year in the group stages. So every away game in Europe is a challenge. But yeah, like you say, this is not the most difficult group. This is not the most difficult team. And you would expect them to win. But yeah, of course, Real Madrid, they found it quite tricky at Sporting last season when they had them in their group, so it certainly won't be easy. Probably one of Barcelona's toughest, if not the toughest, after Juventus match of the season, but yeah, one you would expect them, as they're playing just now, to come through with at least a point and probably all three.
I think if we look at form as well, obviously Barca are unbeaten, but so are Sporting. I think they've only conceded one at home so far this season. They've scored in every game bar one. So, you know, they're in a good run of form as well. And being at home, a full round as well, I tend to agree with you. And, you know, it could be tricky if Barca don't approach it in the right manner. I mean, for me, a lot of sort of like, with the greatest of respect, the bigger clubs in Europe, when they tend to go to these games, what they perceive to be sort of lesser clubs, as it were, it's almost ingrained in the mentality. And then you sort of take your foot off the gas, and before you know it, you're a goal or two behind. And, you know, you just can't turn things around. So I think, you know, Valverde will have them approaching it that it is their most important game of the season because it's the next game. And I think if Barca could get an early goal, then I think it will be a reasonably comfortable victory. But the longer it goes on, you know, I could see, you know, Sporting getting a draw out of it, perhaps.
We will see what happens in the Champions League for Barcelona away against Sporting Lisbon coming up this week. And of course, stay tuned to marca.com/EN and at Marca in English on Twitter for live updates throughout the game. And of course, full-time match analysis as well, and all the quotes from all the players coming out. In particular, as you mentioned earlier, Jason, Jordi Alba was probably the most interesting one, saying that Valverde is managing this Barcelona side so well, and it's something that is very difficult to do at the Catalan club. And also, can I just point out, completely forgot to mention this, Girona, of course, a Catalan derby as well. So now we've got two of those along with Espanyol for Barcelona this season. Right, let's talk about Los Blancos and Real Madrid. It's been quite a week for them, it has to be said. A 1-0 loss against Betis at home that had Isco coming out and saying that we're anxious as a team when we play at the Bernabeu, which is very peculiar because normally we're thinking Fortress Bernabeu for Real Madrid. They did manage to pick up a victory against Alaves, but not before Alaves scored their first goal of the season. It doesn't say much about Real Madrid's defensive troubles at the moment, despite Betis boss Quique Setién coming out last week and saying that Real Madrid have a squad and are playing on the same level of Pep Guardiola's Barcelona. There'll be a lot of Barca fans that'll be quite unhappy with those comments. A wild week for Madrid, who've seen new deals signed for Karim Benzema and Marcus Llorente. Benzema then involved in a car accident, but unharmed on Friday, I believe. And Isco joining the 200 club for Real Madrid as well. And all of this before they have a really tough tie away at Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League on Tuesday night. Let's start very briefly back with last week's loss against Betis and the problems, Ewan, at home for Real Madrid right now.
Yeah, that summary there says it all. It's never quiet at Real Madrid. There's always something going on. And yeah, a quiet-looking game against Real Betis after drawing the first two home games of the season. That sort of looked like one on paper where, okay, you know, get a win here, you know, on a quiet Wednesday night, late game, and then just, you know, steady the ship a little bit. But obviously it turned out even worse than they thought. And even when they were, you know, drawing 0-0 late on, and that was already probably going to set the alarm bells ringing, to then lose that game and not even take a point, that was... Yeah, that's a real concern for Real Madrid, to have played three home games and to have taken just 2 points so far. And it's a strange one because, you know, Real Madrid, they've had this problem for a while where when the team isn't playing well, when they're not scoring, that's when the fans become a little bit, you know, they whistle the players sometimes. There's been some sort of high-profile incidents of that. And I think that's what Isco was sort of referring to with his quote, you know, sort of saying that, you know, it gets anxious at the Bernabeu when the longer it goes on, without Real Madrid getting a goal. If they get an early goal, it seems to sort of steady them and they can relax a little bit. But if it gets to half time and it's still 0-0 or 1-1, then yeah, I think the players do sort of suffer from that sort of anxiety from the home fans. And the club have sort of tried to address this, putting the most vocal fans, they've moved them down a couple of stands, put them right behind the southern goal, but that really hasn't done much either. And yeah, when the whole stadium isn't together singing and everybody's sort of leaning back in their comfy seats and just expecting to be entertained, if everyone's not really pulling in the right direction, then yeah, the Bernabeu maybe is going to become a problem for Real Madrid. And yeah, to have drawn with Levante, Valencia and Real Betis, you could argue maybe other than Valencia, they've not really played one of the true toughest ties that they'll play this season at the Bernabeu. So that could be a problem when Barcelona come to town, when Atletico move across the city for a game, and obviously in the latter stages of the Champions League. So yeah, I think it is a problem, and not one that can just sort of be dismissed as you know, a poor run of form.
There's injury problems at the moment for Real Madrid. I mean, they've been talking about bad refereeing decisions against Betis and just a lack of luck as well, because the number of chances they had last week against Betis in particular to try and get that victory was phenomenal, that none of them were able to be turned in. Also this injury problem, though, they're missing Toni Kroos, Marcelo, Benzema's out injured, of course, Kovacic is also out and away from the squad. We've been praising Madrid for the depth that they have, but it does seem like defensively at times, just in a little bit of disarray. I mean, Sergio Ramos switched off for that Betis goal that was the late winner in the 94th minute last week. They just seem prone to these lapses in concentration right now. Good that they've got Cristiano Ronaldo back as well, but Ronaldo can't be this saviour forever as he starts to get older and older as well, Jace.
Well, no, he can't be, but I'm just going to sort of take the point about not so much the lack of luck or the sort of lack of depth, but, you know, if we would go back to last season, there were plenty of games when, you know, I use the sort of Las Palmas example when they were 3-1 down at the Bernabeu, but what they had last season, which they haven't yet got in this season, is they were dragging themselves through the game to the very end. They were hitting those late goals, which a lot of commentators were saying, oh, they're just lucky. It wasn't luck, it was just that they were on it for the entire game. I think, you know, you just identified there, Sergio Ramos, when I watched the goal again just before we were doing the podcast, and for someone who's their captain and one of their most experienced players to just allow Christian Tao just to basically walt past him into acres of sort of open space, it's really unforgivable. But, you know, I don't think you can blame the injury situation. They have got one of, if not the best squads in the Liga, potentially in Europe, and they should have the capabilities for people that are coming in to plug any gaps. I know a lot's thought of Jesus Vallejo, who was going to be Pepe's replacement, who still hasn't played a game yet. But when he was in the Bundesliga, I think it was for Eintracht Frankfurt, and his coach there described him as scandalous. You know, he has it all for a centre-back. So I think someone like him, when he comes in, you potentially settle things down. But you look at, you know, they've got Raphael Varane in there alongside Ramos, the French international. You know, he needs to step it up more often. He's too injury prone. Going back to Ronaldo, you know, okay, he's been out for a few games. He couldn't really have done too much more at the weekend. I think he hit the post twice. They can't always rely on him, but look, even taking Ewan's point about the Bernabeu, at the end of the day, this happens to every team. You've just got to work through it. It doesn't help when you've got, you know, 80,000 people booing you and whistling you, but it was the same at the Bernabeu last year, to the point where, you know, Marco even commented on it, that Florentino Perez and Ramos, and I think even Ronaldo, actually had to come out and plead with their supporters to stop whistling players. They've obviously not taken heed of that, because they want, as you said, they want to be entertained, and they don't feel that's happening at the moment. So it's down to the 11 on the pitch and those that come off the bench, you know, to knuckle down and get on with it and work through it and be back to how they were last season.
It's very much that old school bullfighting atmosphere at Real Madrid, isn't it, when you're there? Because I think being entertained, Jason, that you just said there, is completely the correct way to describe it. It's not just good enough to see. Back when, obviously, in bullfighting was a little more popular, although it still is very popular in Madrid, it wasn't enough to just be seeing a bullfighter, you know, dancing around, stepping away from the ball, and the matador kind of still controlling things. It was all about the show that the matador had to put on, and if it wasn't good enough, there were jeers and whistles. And in that same way, Real Madrid are having to be like the old school matadors and not only win, but win with style and quality and really impress the Bernabeu stands that have seen so much quality football down the years anyway. You know, just a generic 2-0 victory or a 2-1 victory against Alaves like they had on the road this weekend, it's not going to cut the mustard. Let's talk quickly about Alaves. It wasn't the easiest game for Real Madrid, and it got quite nervy. Dani Ceballos with a brace on his first La Liga start for Real Madrid, for his new side. But Alaves able to get on the score sheet for the first time this season against Real Madrid. Very surprising indeed, really, considering the struggles they've had. New manager boost, perhaps, with Giovanni De Biasi coming in and taking control this week. Or just Alaves knew they needed to get something because they've had such an atrocious start to the season and they were just all guns blazing and up for taking the game to a Real Madrid side that are a little weaker at the moment.
I think Mendizorroza was a bit of a fortress for them last season. I think they were only beaten there by Barca, Real Madrid and maybe one or two others. And they've had a very, very poor start. I've never won to sort of go with the new manager bounce, but maybe it does have an effect. I think at the end of the day, in a perverse sort of way, a bit like Real, they need to sort of get things going in order to get the crowd behind them, in order to have like the 12th man, if we want to use that phrase. And I think just, okay, they lost the game, but they scored a goal. They played fairly well. There were some passages of play that were excellent. They have to look forward. They can't look back. They are where they are. And, you know, push forward and let's see where they are sort of Christmas time and how they're going to get on for the second half of the season.
Talking about the La Liga table then, Real Madrid now 7 points off Barcelona 6 games into the season. If you'd said Barca are going to have a 7-point gap, even to start a campaign, You'd have also said it's very difficult for any side to get themselves back from 7 points down against the Catalan Giants. Nobody has said yet Real Madrid's title run is already over, and it would be a big statement to make, but perfection is surely going to be needed at least for the next 2 or 3 months to ensure that they stay in this race and it doesn't slip away too early, Ewan.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, 7 points is absolutely massive. In any league, it's massive, but even more so in La Liga. I mean, when you look at the title race, most seasons, still, at, you know, 3 points maybe the biggest gap with just a couple of weeks to go. It's always so competitive, especially with Atletico Madrid in the mix as well. You never know just how far they can go. And Sevilla at one point last season looked like they could challenge as well. So 7 points is, it truly is massive. But one thing that maybe will give Real Madrid fans a little bit of optimism is that they've maybe had some of the tougher fixtures already out the way, whereas Barcelona, their opening fixture list, and we sort of said this before the start of the season, maybe, you know, when there was talk of Barcelona supposedly being in crisis, one thing that was maybe going to go in their favour was the fact they had a sort of early season, a sort of simple early season fixture list. They haven't, I don't think they've played any European side yet, whereas Real Madrid have had a couple of tougher fixtures, and you know, Valencia, maybe not much of a surprise that they've taken a point there, and Levante, you know, they've looked really good so far this season, and that will surely be a tricky game for Barcelona as well when it comes around. So they maybe got a couple of the tougher fixtures out the way, but yeah, they haven't played a Sevilla yet, they haven't played Atletico Madrid. You know, there's still some really tough fixtures to come for Real Madrid as well, and you know, it's not just that they've been so unlucky that you'd think they're going to win all their games all the way to the end of the season. It's almost like, will that gap get even bigger rather than will it get shorter? Because going by their form, Barcelona look like they're going to, you know, keep this up, keep improving. Whereas Real Madrid, there's still so many concerns, even as we've said, from that Alaves defeat. So it's a 7 point gap, but it probably won't be 7 points at the end of the season. But I'm not sure if it'll be more or less, because the way they're going, it wouldn't be too surprising if they drop another few shot points at home.
I think, I think where Valverde's got his work cut out as well, it's the complacency element. I think if we look back to not last season, but the season before, you know, Barca were streets ahead of Real going into the last few weeks of the season, and then Zidane's players clawed it back to within a point. I think if the season had been 1 or 2 weeks longer, Real would have probably overhauled them. So I actually think it's a dangerous gap if Barcelona sort of believe that, you know, they're going to carry on as they are. Of course they're going to drop points as well. Anyone that suggests the title race is over already, and I'm not even talking about where Real Madrid are. You look at Atleti, only 4 points behind them. Sevilla, only 5 points behind. It's a ridiculous statement to make that the league is already over. Again, we give it a few months and let's see where we are. But I'm almost certain that, you know, even if Barca are still top by the new year, Real Madrid are going to be hot on their heels. Make no mistake about that.
Title race not done for Los Blancos then. Just very quickly then on the Champions League game, they have away at Borussia Dortmund. Another tough task against a side that have a very good record in Europe against Real Madrid in recent years.
And they've scored 19 goals this season and only conceded one. And they look very, very good indeed. So Real have got the work cut out in this game for sure.
What do you think in terms of a starting 11 for Zidane? Does he stick with what worked on the weekend, or and many changes going to be made for the midweek game, the trip to Germany?
I think for Zidane, his lineup is mostly written form, I think, because of the injuries he suffered. You know, one of his biggest decisions that he has to make every game is does he play all three members of the BBC, or does he shift it around and include Isco? But with Benzema being out, that decision sort of made for itself. And with a couple of other injuries, if Toni Kroos is out as well, then maybe Ceballos gets another shot at it. If Toni Kroos is back, then I'm sure Ceballos is put back on the bench. So, this is probably one of the easier lineups for Zidane to pencil in, because there's so many injuries that when he's looking for his best 11, it almost writes itself.
Sure, you'd be expecting to see Bale and Modric more involved, of course, sat on the bench on the weekend in the victory against Alaves. Bale, plenty of criticism in the early part of the season for him. Modric, who tried to be a catalyst against Betis but just couldn't get it done at the Bernabeu, as Madrid struggling in La Liga to start the campaign, 7 points off Barcelona, sat in fifth at the moment. Right, we've spent far too long on the big two this week, already half an hour into the show, so let's start flying around elsewhere. We'll start with Atletico Madrid, of course, second in the La Liga table, despite their iffy start to the campaign with that draw on the opening night against New Boys Girona. They've been talking a lot about finding Antoine Griezmann a strike partner, and they finally sealed the deal 4-1. Off the pitch, Diego Costa will be returning to Atletico Madrid. Huge signing in the end that seemed like it was always going to happen once this transfer ban was lifted and players were going to be able to come in. That always seemed like it was going to be the obvious move that Atleti would make. There's been a bit of talk, though, about how Costa's not a guaranteed starter. Koke saying that in the midweek. Is that just complete rubbish to me? I think it is. Diego Costa, you signed him for $65 million to return to a side where he basically made his name in European football. You are expecting him to partner Griezmann straight from the get-go, surely?
Well, I think, yes, you are, absolutely. You don't leave your record signing on the bench, I think. But what they've got to be careful of is sort of the precedent that was set by Arda Turan and Alice Vidal at Barcelona, who both sat, you know, in the background, effectively, for 6 months. And then when they first came into the team, they never really did what was expected of them. Turan's so far out of the picture at Barcelona now that they'll try and offload him in January. So, how fit is Costa going to be? You know, is he going to be the rampaging bull of a player that he's been at Chelsea and that he was at Atleti, you know, complete fans' favourite? Or is he going to need to be given time to actually sort of worm his way back into the side? You know, maybe it's not so fanciful to suggest that he can't come straight in. He's going to have to, you know, make sure his fitness is at 100%, you know, and then bring him in slowly. But that's ultimately a decision for Simeone. I think it's a fantastic buy for them. You know, they've been wanting him back for a while. He's been wanting to go back there. And, you know, one hopes it's a marriage made in heaven. But, you know, again, let's wait and see.
Interesting to see what happens Atleti with that front lineup. Vieto with a solid game alongside Griezmann on the weekend, and their 2-0 victory against Sevilla, a game that took a little bit of time to get going, but once it did at Atleti's new home ground, the Estadio Wanda Metropolitano, Atleti the far better side. Sevilla have all this pace in their lineup but unable to really get going, and an Nzonzi mistake as well leading to one of the goals. Yannick Carrasco's just started to find a bit of form in the last week as well. Had a goal in midweek and a goal on the weekend against Sevilla. He's a big part of the kind of machine that Atletico Madrid need to start getting clicking and turning into gear to maintain the title challenge, I think, just off the front two at the moment, Carrasco. And he's starting to find his feet this season.
Yeah, but then at the same time, we don't want to get too carried away, because he seemed to sort of find his feet at this time of last season. He scored a hat-trick, he got a couple of braces, and, you know, he was Atletico's top scorer early on in the season and then sort of faded away. And I think it's very difficult for Carrasco in this Atletico team. You know, Simeone's still, he's offered a bit more variation in the last couple of seasons, but he's still, when it comes down to it, when it's a big game, it's 4-4-2 for him. You know, if maybe Barcelona are copying him with this return to 4-4-2 that we maybe predicted is going to hit La Liga, but Simeone, that's still his favourite formation. So it means that when Carrasco does come into side, it's hard to find a place for him. He even said last season he prefers to play on the left-hand side rather than the right, and that was a slightly odd comment, and it almost makes it, he sort of wedges him into just one position that he can play, and if that's not available for a particular game, then he's going to be left on the bench, you know, especially with Costa coming in. You know, Simeone likes to have Griezmann playing alongside a natural centre-forward. You know, like Vieto came in at the weekend. He's played Correa a couple of times this year, but normally he would rather have Fernando Torres or Gameiro if they were fit and on form. And you're like, as Jason says, it would be a shock if after a couple of months getting up to speed that if that man that partners Griezmann isn't Costa. So it's hard to find a place for Carrasco in this team sometimes, and all he can do is just keep popping up with goals and making a case for getting more and more minutes.
In terms of the game in midweek, they host Chelsea at the new ground. The intimidation factor, Diego Simeone wants it to be there. It was rocking against Sevilla on the weekend, particularly in the second half when the goals started to go in. But after the draw against Roma, it's important to start picking up victories. It's a really tough group for Atletico Madrid. Difficult to go to Roma and get anything, obviously, against a Serie A side that have got a great strike force. But a 0-0 draw there. They'll really want to get a home win. Home games are going to be important against Chelsea and Roma in terms of getting through this Champions League group, you feel?
I think it's going to be a game they'll enjoy, not only because it's at home, but if, you know, obviously when they played Chelsea before in the Champions League, they're real sort of wars of attrition, and that's what Simeone loves. And obviously he gets his team up for those games, the crowd are always up for those games. And I mean, Ewan was obviously at the ground at the weekend, even just sitting watching it on the television, the sort of the animalistic roar when the goals are going in or when Atleti are breaking forward, I mean, it puts hairs on the back of your neck, even if you're not there. You know, I can't imagine what it was like for Ewan.
Yeah, and Chelsea, it really was like something. And I think, like, I think we all kind of agreed before the season that, you know, it was a real unknown just how much of a home advantage Atleti were going to have. You know, new stadium, we've seen struggles at other teams that have moved home, like West Ham, and it was a real unknown. And yeah, being there for this game on Saturday, when the goals went in, like you say, Jason, it really was a roar. And behind the South Stand, the fans were properly jumping. And, you know, luckily, I think the stadium was well built. It wasn't shaking at all. But there was a real roar coming from that end of the ground. There was a real, you could see it. The players were just sort of looking up at it. And when they scored that first goal, they jumped over the advertising boards and celebrated with the fans. And that was, I think, really important in sort of making it feel like, you know, this is our home, we're here, you're right there, and sort of a connection. And yeah, sorry to interrupt, but it really is a strong home advantage.
Simeone's already said it's his Colosseum. It reminds him very much of like the Romans and stuff. I mean, to come into that sort of atmosphere is going to be difficult for any team. And it's sort of taking up your point as well, Ewan. Two games in and they already feel at home. I think that's unheard of for a team when they've moved into a new ground. And also the ground has just been awarded the 2019 Champions League final. So it's got everything going for it at the moment. And I can't wait for this game, actually. I think it's going to be a real, real quality game of football.
It definitely feels like the one to watch, although PSG against Bayern Munich will perhaps split some of the neutral fans in terms of their viewing on Wednesday night. But as you say, war of attrition. Two great managers to watch as well in terms of Simeone and Conte on the sideline. I mean, fieriness and emotion in the stands. It's going to be double that on the touchline in midweek between those two. I cannot wait, as you say, for this game to kick off. Let's move and talk a little bit about Sevilla. They're also in Champions League action this week on Tuesday night against Maribor, the easiest game for a Spanish side in the Champions League, you would have thought, this week. They've struggled, though, in the last week. They left it late against Las Palmas in midweek last week and then losing on the road to Atleti. Not the worst result in the world. It's always tough to take on Atletico Madrid when they do get on song. But it's just been a little slow and laboured at times, and silly mistakes creeping into this side as well. It's after what looked like a really bright start, fiery start to the season, it's all just kind of drying up after the first couple of weeks for Sevilla at the moment.
I don't think you can be too hard on them, Ollie. I mean, as you said, you know, they've had a good start. They've got a new manager that's come in. He's got them, Eduardo Barroso's got them playing very similar to how his Celta team played. You know, they're in your face. They like to press. They're an attacking team. And, you know, I think on the day against Atleti, in the end, they just weren't up for it. I think, you know, second half, once that first goal went in, their heads dropped. But look, they've got a few games coming up, Maribor being the first one, which I think they'll win quite convincingly. They've then got Malaga after that, which again, I think they can win that quite convincingly. Yeah, I think they'll be fine for the rest of the season. You know, they're up there on merit in third place in La Liga. Perhaps the only thing they've got to look at is perhaps their goal scoring. They've only scored 7 goals in the league, and when you compare it to the teams around them, you've got Atleti and Valencia with 12 scored, Real with 11 scored and Barca with 20 scored. Then there's an obvious need to put the ball in the back of the net, which may harm them going forward. But I don't think you can be that hard on them the way they're playing. They're exciting to watch, and they've just had a bad result at the weekend.
Yeah, maybe I'm being overly critical and just trying to pick people apart on this podcast. I like to bring out the negative when things are looking a little sunny, that's for sure. But I just thought in terms of the pace and quality that we saw in the opening few weeks of the season, Sevilla just starting to slow down slightly. And Steven Nzonzi certainly looks like a player that had every kind of thing going to his head last season in terms of the praise and the possible move back to the Premier League. And now Hardy looks anything like he was doing in the first half of last season. A bit all over the place at times as well. And they need to sort that out because that holding midfield position is so vital for Sevilla. You mentioned Valencia there, Jason. That's a big win they got on the road against Real Sociedad. A five-goal thriller with two sendings off as well. Simone Zaza with an 85th minute winner. West Ham fans are livid seeing this because Zaza firing in the goals in La Liga at the moment. Really good start to the season for him. Really good start to the season for Valencia. I mean, the big question we're probably going to be asking a lot on this podcast is, are they back? And I'll throw that one out to you, Ewan.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, you know, Marcelino's come in this season, and you know, I think it all started from that first game where, because Valencia left their transfer business really, really late, and that first game he hardly had a squad together, and he was able to, you know, squeeze a 1-0 win against Las Palmas out, and then the reinforcements arrived, and they were able to draw with Real Madrid and pick up some other really impressive results, and hold Atletico Madrid as well, and obviously win this game away at Real Sociedad, a good Real Sociedad team as well, and yeah, I think they really are back. And sort of watching this game, you felt like this was maybe a battle for a potential Champions League place. You know, Sevilla, of course, is, as we've said, you know, maybe they haven't convinced fully at times, but they're still up there. They've still picked up a lot of points. Atletico Madrid, obviously, have recovered from that opening day draw against Girona, and they look like they're going to, you know, at least finish in the top three again. But in terms of that fourth Champions League spot, if Sevilla sort of slow down a little bit towards the end of this season, as they did last year, then Valencia, maybe Real Sociedad as well, but Valencia definitely looked like they could make an almost instant return to the Champions League, which would be, you know, manager of the season kind of achievement if Marcelino was able to pull that off.
Yeah, Zaza with five goals in his first six games in La Liga, scored 6 in 20 last season when he joined the club from West Ham on loan for the second part of the season. A superb start for him. In terms of Valencia, and that we've mentioned the heart of the midfield on a few occasions. Dani Parejo as well, looking like he's really enjoying his football now, alongside Condogbia, who gives him that stability, Jason, in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I mean, Condogbia, I think, is a great signing. I know he was red-carded at the weekend, but the way he holds just in front of the defence, it's allowing Parejo to sort of get forward, make those runs that he loved to do. I think, you know, Marcelino deserves a great deal of credit. He's given the team a bit of confidence back, and I don't think, you know, you can underplay when a team plays with confidence. You know, everything's possible. Zaza being the perfect example. He's like a man possessed at the moment. And, you know, all around the pitch, they're all playing to their potential. Parejo is flying. If you look at the difference between him now and to how he was towards the back end of last season, it's like a completely different player. So I think, you know, with the results that they've got, they can certainly build on that. And like Ewan said, I mean, if he can keep them round about where they are at the moment or even bring them even higher up, what a job he'll have done. And it's nice to see a bit of stability there for a change after everything that's gone on before. You've now got a guy that's come in with experience. He's settled things down. More importantly, he's got the results, so he's got everybody believing. The crowd are behind him now at home. Everything's looking up for them.
Well, it surely won't be too long before they are the architects of their own downfall, Valencia. See, I'm being negative again there. No, it's great to see them back up towards the up top end of the La Liga table, sat in fourth at the moment. Just finally then, let's talk about another managerial dismissal. Fran Escriba sacked from Villarreal after they've had a very iffy start to the season. Started with two losses against Levante and Sociedad, albeit on the road, those games. But beaten 4-0 away from home by the La Liga returning boys, Getafe. And a draw against Espanyol in their game before that. The victories only coming against Real Betis and Alaves. It's a good win against Betis, though, you have to say, considering their solid start to the season. And a win in the Europa League as well against Astana. It's not been the worst start to a campaign for Villarreal, but Escriba, his time is done after just over a year at the Yellow Submarine's helm. Ewan, surprised at all by this?
Yeah, I really am. This sort of came as a bit of a shock. You know, Villarreal haven't had the greatest start to the season, but considering what Escriba did when he came in, and remember, when he came in at the start of last season, it really was, you know, the eve of the season because, you know, the man we just talked about, Marcelino, when he left Villarreal, he did so, during pre-season, like just before Villarreal were to get their Champions League playoffs underway. And for him to come in, they had so many injuries at that time as well. For him to come in and to sort of get this team going and get this team playing, that was, you know, and they finished fifth last season. That was a real achievement, I thought, because he had no time to prepare the team. He had so many injuries. And then the start of the season as well, they don't have their first choice and second choice goalkeeper. They're both out, ligament injuries, and he's got another couple of players have been injured as well. I mean, he couldn't have been dealt a worse hand, really, and to be punished for it, you know, losing to Etapi 4-0 is never pretty. You know, you have to admit that. But I don't think it was maybe bad enough for Villarreal to pull the trigger just now. But at the same time, you have to look at Villarreal over the last decade or so, decade and beyond, and the decisions they've tended to make at boardroom level have usually worked out. You know, they had a couple of bad years getting relegated, but more often than not, they make the right decisions when they make a big call like this. So maybe they've seen some things behind the scenes that they thought, okay, this was the best time to do this. But yeah, from my point of view, this game is a bit of a shock.
Maybe they've got someone else lined up. I can't see any other reason why they do it. It's a ridiculous decision, in my opinion.
Do you think it was helped by Zubeldia's dismissal at Alaves? Once the first one goes, everybody else is suddenly on the hot seat a little bit more.
Potentially, but I mean, look, how many games are we into the season? 5-6 games in. You don't sack a manager after that period of time, unless you're right down the bottom with no points whatsoever. I think it's a crazy decision. I mean, even with, like, you look at the Getafe game. Getafe gave Barca a game the week before and were only a few minutes away from getting a draw against Barcelona. So, you know, okay, they've come up, but they're no mugs. They think, you know, dropping their heads, 3 goals in 13 minutes against them, okay, it's not great, but I don't understand the logic behind that decision at all.
Yeah, still very surprising, Villarreal's move, but as I say, beaten by Getafe away on the road this week. Not a good result indeed. There are other big results. Malaga picked up their first point of the season against Athletic Club Bilbao. Espanyol, the 4-1 victory against Deportivo La Coruña. Celta Vigo with a 4-0 win on the road against Eibar. Sorry, Ewan. And Leganés getting a victory against Las Palmas, taking us into the Champions League. This week, of course, Tuesday and Wednesday. We've touched on the games already, but just a reminder, Sevilla against Maribor on Tuesday, as well as Real Madrid's trip to Borussia Dortmund, and then it's Barcelona as they take on Sporting Lisbon on the road on Wednesday, followed by Atletico Madrid taking on Chelsea at home. And then the Primera Division gets back underway next weekend once again. Celta Vigo against Girona kicking us off on the Friday. Depor Getafe, Sevilla, Malaga, Levante, Alaves and Leganes against Atletico Madrid on the Saturday. Sociedad against Betis on the Sunday. Barca, Las Palmas, Villarreal, Eibar, Valencia, Bilbao and Real Madrid, Espanyol. Your fixtures for Sunday evening. Jason, Ewan, big thanks for joining us on the show. Ewan, fire out the book once more and your Twitter handle as well, please.
Yeah, the book is called Hijacking La Liga, all about Atletico Madrid. And yeah, Twitter handle is eMcTier. Thanks for having me.
eMcTier, pleasure as always. You and Jason, about yourself, fire out the Twitter handle. Big thanks for coming on the show, stepping in last minute today.
No, thanks for having me as always. My Twitter handle is just simply at Jason Pettigrove.
Very simple. Not Pettiford, Pettigrove. You can also catch Marker in English on Twitter. Very simple. At Marker in English. At Marker in English. All one word. You can get onto Facebook. Just type in Marker in English in the search bar and it should crop up. Like and follow the Facebook page. And of course, marker.com/EN. Marker.com/EN. All three will give you the latest breaking news and views from around the world of La Liga. Get onto Audio Boom and iTunes. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Just search Eye on La Liga. And we will be back perhaps on Thursday, depending on what happens in the Champions League. Although considering two of those fixtures, there's a good chance we could be talking about something very special indeed, particularly with Atleti against Chelsea. If not, we will be back next week to discuss it all once again in 7 days' time. Until then, enjoy the football. Really appreciate you listening. Remember to give us a little review as well if you fancy it on iTunes. It always helps boost the ratings a little bit, unless you think we're terrible, in which case, yeah, don't bother. We will see you again in 7 days. Have a good one. Take care. We'll be right back.